and welcome to the Impact Interviews. My name's Laura, and today I'm here with Chris Griffiths, co-director of the ASME UK Centre for Applied Research. We'll hear today from Chris, who's made significant contributions in the understanding of air pollution and its impact on asthmatics and the general population. So, hi, Chris.
Hi, Laura. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. So we're here on the Impact Interviews. So my first question for you is, what is impact to you and why do you think people should care about creating impact?
Well, impact for me is, in this context, is doing work that changes policy and practice and through that hopefully makes a difference to people's lives. So it's about generating the best quality research evidence and then translating that in words that people can understand, such that they know why you've done the research and what the implications are for them. So that's for general public, but for professional audiences, it's again about making your results clear and well presented, easy to understand, and in a format that they'll find easy to translate into new ways of doing things.
Why should people care about creating impact?
Well, that's why we're here, really. I mean, you know, if you're doing research, then medical or health research, then it's just about trying to make the world a healthier place. I work as a GP, and looking back, so much of my research has the ideas for research have been generated in, you know, in consultations when I'm face to face with patients, and you understand the problem that they're facing, and you think about ways of changing things to make things better. You know, all the way from screening for infectious diseases through to preventing asthma attacks, etc., etc. So it's important because I guess as a GP, I can see the relevance of so much of what we do to people's health.
Amazing. And so obviously you're very interested in the impact of air pollution on general health, but for asthmatics, but also in the general population more widely. And that's a very hot topic, right? You know, the introduction of ULEZ schemes and just air pollution in general, not just in this country, but all around the world. So yeah. If you wouldn't mind, we'll do our lightning round question. So the first thing is, what is it that you're doing? Who cares? Why is it amazing, the stuff that you know?
What is it? Well, everybody's surrounded by the air that they breathe, and the air that they breathe, unfortunately, is often contaminated with things which aren't helpful. So these harmful gases, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, they're chemicals like carbon and bits of heavy metal that have come off cars, the brakes, the tyres, road dust and so forth, all these sorts of things that we're breathing in, which when large-scale studies are done, you know, it's found that they're harming people's health. Unfortunately, we're very good at contaminating our environment, be it, you know, the water that we drink or swim in, the air that we breathe, the food that we eat. It's, you know, it's a distressing time for people on planet Earth, and you know, it's largely self-inflicted, and so finding ways of ameliorating it and protecting people's health is pretty important. Right now, air pollution, a lot of air pollution that exists is a result of burning fossil fuels, and fossil fuels warm the planet, and so they're a big contributor to global warming or heating, and so it has a huge relevance to climate change. So it's not just about people's health, it's about the planetary health and biodiversity. You know, we're on the verge of another breakdown in species, extinction progressing, and these are things that are just of enormous importance. So
I was thinking about the question about who cares. And it's kind of like a little bit of a superfluous question, really, because everybody cares.
Everybody should care, but you know, people are so busy getting on with their lives that not everybody's able to care about it in a direct way and do something about it. When you think about trying to improve things, then as an individual, in many ways, there's very little that you can do. A lot of the things that are going to make a difference are done at a national level, policy, international policy, international agreements. And so you can do things as an individual, but a lot of this is about trying to influence things at a strategic level, locally, nationally, internationally.
So I think Mon alluded to the fact that you may have some results coming out later this year. So I'm not going to push that too hard. But the question about why is it amazing? I mean, she started to talk about the idea of a systemic impact on children, for example. So children who walk to school in polluted zones, you know, you understand things not just about their respiratory health, but also to broader level about their development, including things like cognition and all things like that. So that sounds pretty amazing to me. So on the topic of why is it amazing, maybe you could start to tease us a little bit with some pre-launches of some of your data.
We're at the end of a program of work that's been going on for about at least 15 years now. What's amazing about it, I'm very excited about it because it's not work that I've done. When you research in this area, air pollution and health, then it involves so many different types of expertise. You know, we call it interdisciplinary research. So we're working with air quality scientists, people who understand climate and the environment. We're working with public health specialists, physiologists, health researchers, and the general public as well. So it's the breadth of expertise that contributes to this work, which I think is amazing. It's a very broad collaboration.
The impact is a group effort.
It's a group effort, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the work began about 15 years ago when our centre, ASTMA UK Centre of Applied Research, was in its early stages. There was a parallel centre also funded by ASTMA UK and the MRC, and very much more of working in biomedicine, you know, mechanisms of asthma and so forth. Anyway, I met the lead from this other centre, the MRC ASTMA UK Centre, and that meeting spawned a programme of research looking into the impacts of improving air quality in London. One of the first pieces of work showed that poor air quality in East London primary schools was stunting the growth of children's lungs. And that was an amazing piece of work because it gained so much traction with the general public, particularly mothers of young children who are absolutely horrified that their children's lungs would be damaged as they were developing, but also with policymakers. So Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, was implementing the ultra low emission zone, or developing the ideas for the ultra low emission zone. And on the basis of this piece of work, really beefed up the ultra low emission zone, trying to really make a difference to air quality. And that's, you know, that happened because the London's ultra low emission zone has made a massive difference, improving air quality in central London and inner London by an extraordinary amount. If you look at research around clean air zones to date, in a lot of places where they've been implemented, they haven't made that much difference to air quality. But London's ultra low emission zone has made a big difference, improvements of almost 50% reductions in some pollutants.
And are you starting to see that in your GP practice? Are you starting to see the consequences of that?
Well, I think the answer to that is no. And the reason why you don't see it is that if you're consulting in general practice, then you're just seeing one patient at a time. Mm-hmm. And I guess if you're a part-time GP, because I spend, you know, half the week researching, half the week, I don't suddenly see a drop in asthma attacks. It doesn't happen like that because, you know, you might go for a week and you might not see a patient with an asthma attack. So it's very difficult to detect a change in, you know, in the numbers of people who come into the surgery with a chest infection or so forth, because it fluctuates so much in an individual practice. But you know, when I cycle to work, I get the train into London and then I cycle from Liverpool Street into Whitechapel. And I'm amazed at the improved air quality in central London. It is dramatic. And so there are ways in which, you know, as an individual, you can see the impact of what's happened, policy changes that have happened and been related to the work that you've done. And so, yeah, you can see it, but I don't see it necessarily in the number of patients who pitch up in the surgery with respiratory problems. You can see it at a population level. If you looked at the data for the entire borough or the whole of London, then you'd see you would see changes. So yes, that's really the way that it works.
And how do you feel like knowing that you made such a positive contribution?
Well, I'm a bit shocked, really.
Why? Why? I mean, because, it's great, right?
Well, because research is, serendipity. You know, for two pins, I would have been researching in a different area if my, my big contacts had been different and I'd met different people and, I would have gone in another direction. So when you start a piece of research, you've no idea whether the results will be of any interest or importance. So, and, probably, 1 out of 20 times you do find something that makes a difference, and the rest of the time it doesn't make much difference because the research wasn't as interesting or relevant as you thought it might be. So that's why I say I'm surprised that that piece of work has made a difference. I mean, it's not just that air quality policy. I think the Mayor of London was passionate about air quality. So these policy changes are not usually the result of one particular research finding.
But your output basically has powered these people who are creating the policy to be more passionate, to be more articulate, to argue more for the changes that need to be made. You've kind of maybe not powered them, but like that kind of sense, without you, they wouldn't have the ammunition to go and make the changes that they want for us all, right?
Well, there's a group called Mums for Lungs, which developed around that time. And of course, they were really fired up by these findings, not surprisingly. And so, yes, that's just one of the pieces of work that really have motivated people like Mums for Lungs to agitate so strongly. And, often scientists aren't much good at agitating. They're gnome-like. They work away in their offices and at the laboratory bench. But, people take up the findings and, can be very assertive and make a big difference because they've picked up the research findings that scientists have generated. And I think that's definitely been the case with respect to this work.
And so what comes next then? So you obviously published those results, policy changes were made, and that's fantastic, but presumably you've not stopped. There's more stuff that more consequences. So can you tell us a little bit about what's next?
Well, we went on to get research funding from NIHR, National Institute for Health Research, to find out whether implementing the ultra-low emission zone has delivered a benefit, has it improved children's health? Mm-hmm. And so we set up a cohort study of children. We recruited primary school children in central London and primary school children in Luton. Luton's got similarly bad air quality to central London, but Luton hasn't got an ultra-low emission zone. And so the air quality has improved a little bit in Luton over the last 5 years, but in London it's improved significantly. So we have two groups of children exposed to different air quality environments. So with this research, we're trying to see what difference the ultra-low emission zone has made to children's health and development. And we've also looked at social and behavioural changes. So did people choose more healthy, active ways of getting to and from school, for example? Have children taken more exercise than they otherwise would, perhaps because there are fewer cars around, perhaps because they perceive the air is cleaner, and so forth? And some of those results are coming out now, showing, for example, that children in London, where the air was getting cleaner and there's less traffic around, they were more likely to switch to walking or scooting or cycling to school, whereas the opposite happened in Luton. There were children that switched to less active ways of getting to school, suggesting that introducing an ultra-low emission zone in central London encouraged people to be more healthy, and particularly the children to take more exercise. So These results are coming out at the moment. We've studied a whole range of different measures by which we judge success or failure. So were the children's lungs growing in a healthier, faster way than if they'd been living in more polluted air? Has their brain development improved? What's happened to their body mass index? Are there less children that are overweight and so forth? So all that data is being analysed now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have the results right now for you because we only just started the analysis a week ago. So those results will come out in the next weeks and months. But it's spawned more research, you know, looking at clean air zones generally across the UK and even across Europe, because across Europe, there's probably about 250 clean air zones. Across the UK, there are about 15 implemented. So the work that we've done raises the question, well, you know, can we do an analysis across more clean air zones to kind of synthesize the results from different clean air zones to see if together we can draw conclusions about how much impact they've had on air quality. And with more data from more clean air zones, you can make stronger conclusions because you've got more measurements, more statistical power and so forth. So the work has spawned, you know, additional analyses to be able to draw stronger conclusions about clean air zones and their benefits. Because why is it important? Well, about 75% of fossil fuel emissions are produced in cities. So cities are, you know, the most polluted places on the planet. So if we can improve air quality in cities, then we are improving air quality for you know, vast majority of the global population. So if clean air zones are effective, then it's something that a policy that should be implemented, not just in the UK, but across Europe, across different continents. You know, cities are polluted across the planet. So, you know, whether clean air zones work has global relevance, definitely.
Yeah. So you've got a busy few years ahead of you then.
all self-inflicted,
but brilliant, right? It's serendipitous results, like, now have global relevance and kind of actual global necessity and urgency, actually, from what you're saying.
Well, it is, yeah, because clean air zones tend to drive clean technologies, so decarbonisation. So people tend to switch from internal combustion engine, petrol diesel engines, to electric vehicles. And we need to understand the health impacts of electric vehicles. They're heavier and produce, you know, grit and particular pollution. So, but broadly, if you're driving forward electrification, decarbonisation of the transport fleet, then that's got to be a good way of reducing fossil fuel usage, and that's better for climate change. So it's got broader implications.
Yeah. And so as we draw to a close, what I'm curious about is, if you think about anybody who's starting out in this journey, who's starting out to think about the impact of what they're doing, or in fact saying, okay, I want to create impact, like, how do I get going? Do you have any hints or tips, or like one key thing, one key message that you'd like to share?
Yeah, a couple of ideas. Always work with the best people. So, you know, find the best people, people who, you know, are experts in the area that you're interested in, and try and work with them, because you'll find that, you know, your research is stronger and probably higher quality. And, you know, frankly, it's easier to get funding if you're working with the best people. So find good people to work with, and then ask the right questions. So, and don't be afraid to ask big questions, because, you know, the big questions are the most interesting ones with the, you know, the most important and relevant results. So yeah, I think those are my two top tips.
Okay, so thank you ever so much, and yeah, thank you, and thanks for appearing on the show.
Thanks, Laura. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Impact Interviews. If you enjoyed this episode, then please check out our back catalogue. And if you've any questions for either us or our guests, then please be sure to get in touch. We'll be back next week with something new. So see you soon.